Thank you for listening to this sermon from Seven Springs Presbyterian Church. If you want to learn more about us, please find us on Facebook or visit us at sevenspringspresbyterian.com.
All right, so we continue in the book of 1 Samuel. We'll be looking at verses chapter 2, verses 12 to the end of the chapter. But just a refresh from what's happened so far, we've met mainly Hannah and her prayer for their child, and the Lord blesses her and be able to gives her a child, and she lends this child to the Lord is what she says last week. And we looked at her prayer last week and that echo of that prayer found in Mary's prayer in Luke. And we read last week, then Elkanah went home to Ramah, and the boy was ministering to the Lord in the presence of Eli the priest. So Samuel, the Hannah's son, is given to the Lord, and this verse of transition going from Samuel living with his parents, living with his mother, to be able to move and underneath Eli the priest and ministering to the Lord with Eli. Now, we've met Eli before, and along the way we've met him. He seems to be somewhat of a faithful person in amongst this remnant in this dark and depressing time. We've looked at that multiple times as we've seen the book of Judges closes with that famous verse that there was no king in Israel and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. But Israel really had a lot of kings, too many kings. They didn't have the one true living king of God, but they had multiple kings. Everyone was their own king in their own eyes doing what was right. So this is where it is. And Eli seems to be somewhere in the middle, stuck in the middle. And we've met his sons before, briefly, in verse 3, where it says that they go to Shiloh, and the sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests to the Lord. But now we turn not to Hannah, not to Samuel, to Eli and his house, to his two sons. And it begins quite depressingly, actually. It says in verse 12, and the sons of Eli were worthless men. They did not know the Lord. Now, what a thing to stop and consider. These priests of the Lord who did not know the Lord. These useless men, worthless men. The NIV translated so worthless men. The New King James translated they're corrupt men. This word is used in Judges 19:22 when they said, and as they were making their hearts merry, behold, the men of the city, worthless fellows, surrounded the house, beating on the door. And they said to the old man, the master of the house, bring out the man who came into your house so that we may know him. This is the epitome of what has happened in the book of Judges, the corruption that had flown through this nation of Israel that was meant to be holy and set apart. But these are worthless fellows, the book of Judges. And these are, the corruption has not just gone to the people of Israel. The corruption has gone to the priests of Israel. When Eli and his sons were priests to the Lord, but they didn't even know the Lord. They were worthless. They were corrupt. What a place you find yourself in. Not just that a nation is corrupt, the nation is turned away from the Lord, but, you know, you had corrupt priests in the temple of the Lord. Now today, just think about that. You know, a minister of the Lord, a priest, not just a priest, a pastor in a church, and was not a saved Christian, was not devoted to the Lord. And this is the time that they found themselves in the book of Samuel. I think it shows the depression which they reached. So we'll read from verses 13 to verses 17 now. The custom of the priests to the people was that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servant would come while the meat was boiling with a three-pronged fork in his hand, and he would thrust it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All that the fork brought up that the priest would take for himself. This is what they did in Shiloh to all the Israelites who came there. Moreover, before the fat was burned, the priest's servant would come and say to the man who was sacrificing, give me meat for the priest to roast, and he will not accept boiled meat from you, but only raw. And if the man said to him, let them burn the fat first, and then take as much as you want, you wish. He would say, no, you must give it to me now, or if not, I will take it by force. Thus the sin of the young man was very great in the sight of the Lord, and the men treated the offering of the Lord with contempt. What an interesting phrase, a situation we find ourselves in, from the switch of Hannah now to Eli's sons. This switch, which I think shows the corruption which is around them, and it shows the loyalty of Elkanah and his family with Hannah. As we've said, the book of Samuel is really about this leadership void, and this leadership void which comes in with many different aspects, but this leadership void which shows the two tensions, two different contrasts of people. That Eli is contrasted often probably with Samuel, but just as a look that Eli and his sons, but you put even Eli and his sons to Hannah's prayer, and against that external prayer which Hannah said, but when Hannah met Eli, her actual phrase was, "Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman." Now it's actually Eli's sons that are worthless men, not Hannah. This outward appearance, inward appearance, that these two priests, these two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, were worthless. And here's the three things that they did. They took any part they wanted, which was against what they did. They took the meat before it had been offered to the Lord, and they also took it by force. So they did three things against this offering that we saw in this. They took it any part they wanted. They took the meat before it had been offered to the Lord, and they took it by force. You think about this type of sin throughout the book of 1 Samuel. We'll see this with the people's sin. We'll see this with Saul's sin. We'll see this in even David's sin if we get to 2 Samuel. But this sin, this word also is used, they utterly scorned or contempt. This is the word which is used in 2 Samuel about his affair with Bathsheba, his adultery with Bathsheba. And it says, "Nevertheless, by this deed you have utterly scorned." But this is the word that we find in verse 17 at the end, the Lord, that they treated the Lord with contempt. That David also contempt the Lord is the word that it used there. Or in the New King James, that contempt word is abhorred. So a few notes, I think, just from this little brief cycle. We'll see a little bit more of Eli's sons in the rest of this chapter. But just a few notes. How important it is. The worship of the Lord and carrying out the worship of the Lord, how the Lord has commanded in His scriptures. Now, we would maybe think this isn't such a big deal that they took the meat, that they asked for it before the burned fat. You know, it seems like it's a minor thing in the eyes of the church. But how important it is to the Lord, we'll see this offense which has happened to the Lord, this sin which happens to the Lord, and towards the end of this chapter where the Lord rejects Eli's house. But to say, we would often say that this isn't too bad, that worshiping is all about the heart, or it's all about different aspects. It doesn't matter how we worship the Lord, but how important worship of the Lord is that we find in this book, but also just in this section. You'd think that his anger, the sin of the young men was very great in the sight of the Lord. Why was the sin so great? What was the great sin that they did? They treated the offering of the Lord with contempt. They treated the offering of the Lord with contempt. You think maybe how they treated the other Israelites, they took what they wanted, that they took the meat by force, they threatened other people, but the main great sin which is mentioned here is they treated the offering of the Lord with contempt. This is why we get in the first table of the first commandments is about worship of God and how often we neglect that. The first four commandments of the Ten Commandments, how often we'll go to from 6 to 10 rather than the first four. But I just think it's an important thing when we're looking through this book to see not only the heart, but it's also their heart towards God, which is the vital part. And we'll take a snapshot of this moment, and the author of 1 Samuel, is the author of this section of Samuel, takes this little detour to stop looking at Eli's sons. You would think you would just block that all together with Eli's sons and put them all together in the text and then, you know, have this contrast. But he deliberately interjects the story of 1 Samuel throughout this passage to remind you of that Samuel is still there, and this almost this contrast happening between Eli's sons and Samuel. So verse 18 to 21 says, Samuel was ministering before the Lord, a boy clothed in a linen ephod, and his mother used to make for him a little robe that he used to take to him each year. And she went up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. And Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife and say, may the Lord give you children by this woman for the petition she asked of the Lord. So they would return to their home. Indeed, the Lord visited Hannah, and she conceived and bore three sons and two daughters, and the boy Samuel grew in the presence of the Lord. So we see this scene change almost. If it was a movie, this scene change from Eli's worthless sons back to Samuel, Elkanah, and Hannah. And this slight excursus teaches us again about Samuel and again about Hannah. That Hannah shows her devotion to God continually, even after getting to what she wanted. She is not treating God as some form of cosmic vending machine. She has prayed to the Lord, and the Lord has blessed her with a child. And this does then not mean, well, the Lord has given me what I want, I shouldn't worship the Lord. Her heart and devotion is still towards the Lord. And the Lord also then shows her blessing upon her. It seems that Hannah's prayer, the barren woman, has borne seven. And she who has borne many children is forlorn, as we looked at last week in 2 Samuel 2:5. The Lord visited Hannah, and the same word is used when we look at Sarah. So again, Hannah is in great company when it comes to women of the Bible, that she is still loyal, that Elkanah is still, and his house is still devoted to the Lord. What sweet prayer that we would think that maybe at the end of verse 10, Hannah walks off the scene and then is forgotten about. The Lord has not forgotten her as she prayed right at the very start. Lord, please remember your servant Hannah. And the Lord indeed does not forget. The Lord gives Hannah not just one child in Samuel, not just two children, but he blesses her with six children in total. So what a great blessing that is for us when we think we are worthless like Hannah, but the Lord is still ministers to us and blesses us. So this slight little detour focuses on Hannah, but also these little snippets that we find in about Samuel. We saw this in verse 11, that the boy was ministering to the Lord in the presence of Eli the priest. In 18, Samuel was ministering before the Lord. And then finally, in verse 21, the boy Samuel grew in the presence of the Lord. That Samuel has been exposed to the presence of the Lord. That this great little this seed, which is going to change this story from Judges to point to the true king, starts here in this book with Samuel. That Samuel is still just a young boy at this time, underneath Eli the priest. That Samuel is still there, devoted to God, just like his mother is devoted to Yahweh. He is still continuing serving, ministering before the Lord. What a great answer to prayer that might be. Again, as we looked at last week, the Lord is working in amongst this dark and depressing time, that many people in the outside wouldn't necessarily, they would see Eli's priest, the corrupt priesthood, they would see everyone doing what was right in their own eyes, but the Lord was still raising up Samuel in amongst this time for a time to be able to be used, to be able to be the voice of the Lord to the people as a prophet. So we'll come back to Samuel. But then we go from Samuel and Hannah back to Eli and his sons. So verses 22 to 26. Now Eli was very old, and he kept hearing all that his sons were doing to all Israel, and how they lay with women who were serving at the entrance of the tent of meeting. And he said to them, "Why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all these people. No, my sons, it is not good to the report that I hear from the people of the Lord spreading abroad. If anyone sins against man, God will mediate for him. But if someone sins against the Lord, who can intercede for him?" But they would not listen to the voice of their father, for it was the will of the Lord to put them to death. Now the boy Samuel continued to grow in stature and in favor in the Lord, and was also with man. That, again, we see this corruption spiral happening in the household of Eli between his two sons. They treated others with contempt, the Lord's offering with contempt. But it's important, as we've looked at trying to pick up some of the themes that flow throughout the book of 1 Samuel, that Eli hears this. We've seen that the voice of the Lord is silent. It doesn't come very often. In the word of the Lord was rare in those days, and there was no frequent vision, 1 Samuel 3, verse 1 says. And the word of the Lord was rare in these days, but Eli is hearing from the people of the Lord that his sons were doing corrupt things. Not only were they treating the offering of the Lord with contempt, but they were laying with women at the entrance of the tent of meeting. So not only were they meant to be holy people, set apart for holy tasks to perform before a holy Lord, they were taking his holy place, his holy temple, and laying with women. What a thing to think about, a church being turned into a brothel, a church been turned into a place of worldly pleasures. But again, they would not hear the report from Eli, that they did not hear, that Eli was hearing from the people of the Lord, but he did not. They did not listen to the voice of their father. It seems that Eli seems to be somewhat of a faithful man. He understands that what they're doing is evil. He seeks to kind of serve God humbly. He seems to be able to represent God's blessing when he blesses Hannah with the blessing of Samuel and then also the other children. He seems that he worships the Lord there at the end of verse 28 in chapter 1. It seems like we don't necessarily know how he is. It seems that he's trying to do the right thing, but definitely when it comes to his parenting is really where his downfall is. It seems that he tries to rebuke his sons, but he doesn't necessarily follow through or carry it out. The Lord is promises that he would deal with them, that he would put them to death. For Lord, the will of the Lord was to put them to death, we see at the end of verse 25. But there came a man of God, says in verse 27. So Eli tries to speak to his sons to try them, to get them to turn, to be able to turn back to the Lord, to serve him humbly with their hearts, but they would not listen to Eli. So God sends a man to Eli and says to him, we'll read in verse 27 until the end of the chapter. There came a man of God to Eli, and he said to them, "Thus says the Lord, did I indeed reveal myself to the house of your father when they were in Egypt subject to the house of Pharaoh? Did I choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to go up to my altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me? I gave to the house of the Lord your father all my offerings by fire and all the people of Israel, from the people of Israel. Why then do you scorn my sacrifices and my offerings? And I command for my dwelling and honor your sons above me by fattening yourselves on the choicest part of every offering of my people of Israel. Therefore, the Lord, the God of Israel, declares, I promised that your house of the house of your father should not go in and out me, but before me forever. But now the Lord declares, far be it from me. For those who honor me, I will honor, and those who despise me, I shall be lightly esteemed. Behold, the days are coming when I will cut off your strength and the strength of your father's house, so that they will not, there will not be an old man in your house. Then, in distress, you will look with envious eye on all the prosperity and shall be bestowed on Israel. And there shall not be an old man in your house forever. And only one of you whom I shall not cut off from my altar shall be spared to weep his eyes out to grieve his heart. And all the descendants of your house shall die by the sword of men. And this that shall come upon your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, shall be a sign to you. Both of them shall die on the same day. I will raise up for myself a faithful priest, who shall do the according to what is in my heart and in my mind. And I will build him a sure house, and he shall go in and out before my anointed forever. And everyone who is left in your house shall come to implore him for a piece of silver or a loaf of bread, and shall say, Please, put me in one of the priest's places, and I may eat a morsel of bread. That we see there was four duties of the priests in this passage he explains, and then four things that Eli's household put above God. The four duties that a priest was to do were to be God's priests. They were to go up into God's altar. They were to burn incense, and they were to wear an ephod before me. There are four things that they did, but obviously they defamed God. They weren't his priests, they were their own priests. They were choosing what to do. They didn't go up to the altar and burn incense as God has commanded, but they defamed his name. But they put four things above, four things that put first above God. They put above my sacrifices, my offerings that I commanded for, my dwelling, and my people of Israel. Their worship really centered around them, not God. Not what God had commanded them, for him and not them. So the Lord promises to Eli, through this man of the Lord, that his household should not go before him forever and ever. Far be it from me, for those who honor me I will honor, and those who despise me will be lightly esteemed. Maybe better translated would be belittled, be made small, be made insignificant. So those who despise me shall be made little. This is a promise to Aaron found in Exodus 28:43 and 29:9. But also we see that story as well with Aaron. Aaron has two sons dedicated who are priests in the temple, and they go in and offer strange fire. We see this in Leviticus 10, verse 1 to 2, and then Numbers 3. Numbers 3:4 says, And Nadab and Abihu died before the Lord when they offered unauthorized fire before the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai, and they had no children. So two other sons of Aaron come up, and they serve the priest in the lifetime of Aaron, their father. It's not the first time we've seen two sons of a priest who defame the Lord's name. It won't be the last. We'll see it again in 1 Samuel as well. But this is what will happen to Eli's house, that there's going to cut off your strength and the strength of your father's house. Verse 31, there will not be an old man in your house. The days of age are past. Eli is old. He's very old. We see in verse 22, he's unable to see later, as we see in chapter 3. His eyesight's going dim. But there won't be any more old men in his house. There won't be an old man in your house forever. People will look. You'll start looking with envious eye on all the prosperity that is happening around them. Other people would be blessed, but you will become little, small, insignificant. There's only going to be one who will be left, who is not going to be cut off. And this person will weep with his eyes out to grieve his heart. And the promise given is that all the descendants of your house shall die by the sword of men. And specifically, we see that his two sons, now this is the first time that it's been mentioned since chapter 1, verse 3, their two names, Hophni and Phinehas, that they're both going to die on the same day. And this is going to be the promise which is coming in there. We'll come back to verse 35, but verse 36 says that anyone who is left in your household shall we come and implore this priest for a piece of silver, a loaf of bread, and say, give me one of your one of the priest's places that I may eat a morsel of bread, that they'll become beggars. Now you think about Israel at this time, the height, there was no kings in Israel, so there was not many prophets. The priest was one of the highly esteemed people in the people of Israel, but Eli's house will go from the top to the bottom very quickly because of what the sons have done. The Lord does not look at the offering of the Lord. He does not look at this what they did at the entrance of the tent of meeting. Just with small eyes, he takes it very seriously how people treat him. But in amongst this dark and depressing time, we've seen some glimmer of hope. We've seen that Samuel is there. But even in amongst this time when the Lord rejects Eli's house, there's a great promise to be found in this this time. I was reading through this passage before out loud, as just trying to practice, and Stella came by and she just, you know, wanted to listen to me and said, "That's a great story, Dad." I was like, "This really isn't the story that you find in children's Bibles." I'm not sure if she quite understood what was happening. You know, that your two sons are going to die by the sword. They're going to die on the same day. No one's going to live in your house forever. You know, you're going to be cast off. You're going to be beggars. You know, it's not really your children's Bible story. However, there is a great promise to be found in verse 35. That there is a promise of a faithful priest to come. A priest that will be raised up by God Himself, who shall do according to what is in my heart and in my mind, and I will build him a shore, literally maybe a faithful house, and he shall go in and out before my anointed forever. I mean, it takes you back to verse 10 when you think about Hannah's prayer, that the Lord will judge the ends of the earth, and He will give strength to His king and exalt the horn of His anointed. Here's that word, anointed, again. And this is the faithful priest. Now, of course, you go back to Samuel coming through. Samuel coming through those little snippets that we've seen in verse 11, that the boy was ministering to the Lord in the presence of Eli the priest. In verse 18, or verse 21, Elkanah went to his house and offered to the Lord a yearly sacrifice to pay his vow. Where the boy continued to grow in the growth and stature and in favor of the Lord and also with man. That here's the faithful priest that is coming. It's going to be Samuel. You're just anticipating that it's going to be Samuel. Now, is Samuel the faithful priest? So, this is a great question. Of course, you... anytime you have any complications like this, you just get scholars that'll talk about different options. So, first of all, is Samuel a faithful priest? Samuel is never really called a priest, although he performs priestly functions and he serves the Lord, ministers to the Lord in the presence of the Lord. Samuel more takes the office of prophet. We see in 1 Samuel 3:20 that in all Israel and Dan to Beersheba, they knew that Samuel was established as a prophet to the Lord. So Samuel is a faithful priest. Or 8 verse 3, 1 Samuel 8 verse 3, yet Samuel's sons did not walk with the ways of the Lord and turned aside, and they took bribes and perverted justice. So in a sense, Samuel is somewhat of a faithful priest that he's raising up for a time like this, but he's not the faithful priest that we see this kingdom established or this priesthood established forever. Maybe you might think of, David being the faithful priest. This verse 35 says that he'll build you a sure house for him. That the sure house that is built might be the temple which is coming. That David and Solomon build the temple of the Lord. We see maybe this might give you some help, but that the promise prayer in verse 25. Please, the servant, trespass your servant for Lord. Chapter 25, verse 28. For Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles for Lord, and the evil shall not be found as long as you live. We're in 2 Samuel 7, 16. In the house of the Lord, your kingdom shall be made sure forever before me. Your throne shall be established forever. So, is this the sure house, that David is the one that will help build the house? David really doesn't function as a priest. He does occasionally make offerings. We'll kind of dissect that maybe a bit in the future. But David really isn't the faithful priest that does according like this promise. So most people sometimes think that as Zadok. Zadok is a faithful priest, the one who takes over. We see this in 1 Kings chapter 2. And put Zadok the priest in the place of Abiathar, that then ends the line of Eli and then switches to Zadok. I think all of these are probably plausible in a scope of meaning as a circle. Our seminary professor used to explain that sometimes the Bible isn't necessarily to be read as a clean, this is exactly what it means. Sometimes it has multiple different layers. The author might understand it a certain way, but ultimately God writing through it, there's a bigger meaning behind it. So is it speaking of Samuel coming up, or is it speaking of David to follow? Zadok, maybe Melchizedek is another person that has been mentioned that is this faithful priest. But ultimately, I think, as the Old Testament does, it points forward to Christ. It points forward that all these might be types and shadows pointing, but Christ is the ultimate anti-type, it's called, the ultimate one that is what the shadow is from. Hebrews paints this picture very well, that Jesus is the priest. Hebrews 2:17, therefore he had to be made like his brothers in every respect, that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. So we see David here being Jesus being the faithful priest, with a great verse in Hebrews 4:14 and 16. Since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast to the confession. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then, with confidence, draw near to the throne of grace, that we might receive mercy and find grace in the help of time of need. But even in this book, in this dark, depressing time, the Lord is promising that Eli's house is falling, it is crumbling down around him, that there's cracks in Eli's legacy, but in through this, God is still going to raise up a faithful priest. And again, that a faithful priest is going to do what is in my heart and in my mind. Again, what a faithful reminder to think about in this time, that in the book of 1 Samuel, that it's always about the outward appearance compared to the heart. But God is going to raise up someone who has his own heart, who does what is in his mind. And this ultimately, I think, points and culminates in Christ coming and being our faithful high priest on our behalf, that we don't have a corrupt priest offering these sacrifices. Even the most faithful priest still needs to go in year after year to make daily, yearly sacrifices of blood and bulls and goats. But Christ went in once for all to make that offering and that propitiation for our sins, finishing what that task of that faithful priest, that he would be able to go in and out before my anointed forever. This is the faithful priest that I think the passage speaks of, that points towards Christ. So even in this dark and depressing time, when we see Eli's corruption, his son's corruption, the house of Eli begin to crack, the Lord raising up Samuel for such a time as this to be able to be a prophet unto the people of Israel, to speak and play a vital part in the establishment of the kingship in Israel. I think it's still very important to see that it's not just even the book of 1 Samuel we're looking at. It's the whole book of the Bible pointing up to Christ, even to pointing to Christ as our great high priest, that we are not Eli. We are not Eli's sons. We are not we are the people of God in this book. Often the illustration is, oh, well, you got to be more like Samuel. Well, we're the people of God. We're lost. We're treating ourselves. We're the ones who does what is right in our own eyes, that needs a high priest that goes in and makes sacrifices according to how God has commanded and fulfill that sacrifice. And we are those people that need that faithful high priest, and that faithful high priest is Christ. So what a great note to end on as we close this chapter of 1 Samuel. But we've got a long way to go, but even just in these opening chapters, we're beginning to see the Lord is working greatly in amongst this remnant people to be able to raise up His faithful priest. And He is going to do that. He is going to raise that faithful priest up.
Thank you for listening to this sermon from Seven Springs Presbyterian Church. If you want to learn more about us, please find us on Facebook or visit us at sevenspringspresbyterian.com. Seven Springs Presbyterian Church began in 1874 and is a congregation of the Presbyterian Church in America, located in Glade Spring, Virginia. Please join us for worship on Sunday at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. for His glory and His gospel.